Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Inside. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Summer is coming to a close and fall is fast approaching later this week, a time which typically kicks off flu season and for the past couple of years, COVID subvariants. This year also comes with an additional concern with the rise in monkeypox or mpox. As of this morning, there have been at least 4,500 confirmed or probable cases of mpox since the virus was first confirmed in California back in late May. Mpox cases are on the decline, but not before sharp criticism by some that the response has been slow, as well as the vaccine rollout. Well, as we head into the third fall of the COVID pandemic, a new booster is being rolled out, promising stronger protection. And of course, we're in the cusp of flu season. Some health experts warn the season could be severe for people who haven't built up a natural immunity over the last 2 years and begin to gather with others during the holidays. There's a lot going on. So to get a prognosis on where we are with all of these viruses, we've invited back Dr. Dean Blumberg, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis. Good morning.
Good morning, Vicky. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you, Dr. Blumberg. So we're at a point in this pandemic where public health protocols like masking, required masking, social distancing, et cetera, have taken a backseat more so than ever before. Is this consistent with what you're seeing in terms of cases and patients?
Yeah, we really are. The cases have really dropped. I mean, our hospital admissions now for COVID, there's very few for COVID itself. Most of the patients who are being admitted to the hospital who are COVID infected, it's incidental infection. They're being admitted for another reason. So we're in a really good place right now for COVID. So that's we're fortunate in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple developments in just the last week. I mean, last night, President Biden said on 60 Minutes that, quote, the pandemic is over, although adding that COVID is still a problem and that they're continuing to work on it. This follows the World Health Organization, WHO, provided its most optimistic prognosis yet for the pandemic, stating, we're not there yet, but the end is in sight. Do you share this optimism?
Yeah, I think we're getting there. I mean, remember all the way at the beginning of the pandemic, how worried we were, and that's because nobody had immunity to COVID. So people were very vulnerable to infection, and that included severe infection. At this point in the pandemic, the vast majority of people have been either vaccinated or they've been infected or a combination of the two. So we do have some widespread immunity throughout the population. So now most infections that are occurring will not be that severe because of the previous immunity. Of course, immunity does wane over time, and we're still having people dying every day from COVID. So it's something that's still serious, but we're in a much better place.
When it comes to children and teenagers, what are you currently seeing in pediatric COVID patients that is similar or even different from previous points in the pandemic?
We're still seeing cases in pediatrics, in the pediatric age range. We're not seeing as much of the MIS-C, the multi-system inflammatory syndrome, in children. That seemed to be a feature more earlier in the pandemic. And we're certainly seeing the consequences of COVID, including long COVID in children, including especially in children who are teens.
The newest COVID boosters have just rolled out, and they have components of both the original virus as well as the Omicron strain to provide protection from both. What do you believe is either the most misunderstood or underreported aspect of these new boosters that we should all know?
You know, one of the really interesting things about these boosters is that the immune response, not only will they be fine-tuned to protect against the original strain and against current variants, but the broader immune response that's achieved with these vaccines likely is going to provide better protection against future variants. Mm. And so I think that's a real advance that we're going to see with the immune response to these vaccines.
Are there any new side effects or different side effects from this new booster?
All the side effects that have been reported with the bivalent vaccines have been very similar to those with other boosters or with the original vaccination. So I'm not expecting anything new.
We're a few weeks into the school year for a lot of districts, and many districts in the Sacramento region, they're strongly recommending masking indoors, but they're not requiring masking. Does the data currently support this? I mean, have you seen an uptick in cases with schools back in session?
We haven't seen an uptick in cases, and so we've been really happy about that. And we know that some students do continue to mask in schools and others don't. I mean, we can see this all in our everyday lives when we go to the grocery store, that really what I've been seeing is a minority of people are masking,
yeah.
And I'm included in that minority. I continue to mask. I've enjoyed not getting COVID, and I've also enjoyed not getting any other respiratory infections for the past few years. So those masks, they work really well against all respiratory infections.
Yeah. Do you recommend certain segments of the population continue to mask, or what is your recommendation since you mask when you're indoors?
Yeah, I still do recommend people mask when they're indoors, when they're in crowds, when they're with people who are outside their household. So if they're on any kind of transit, on a bus or a train or plane, they should be masking if they want to be protected. You're really in a captive space there, and you don't know the people around you, how infectious they might be or what precautions they've been taking. And then certainly if you have a weakened immune system or comorbidities or you're older than 65, I would definitely strongly consider masking in those situations also.
We're currently, I believe, in the fourth school year where there has been a part of a pandemic. What impact have you seen that masking has had on children? Because I remember early on there was a concern that this could impact development at such a formative age for some children.
Yeah, there were a lot of concerns about that because children, it's really important for them to be around other people and to see other faces and expressions, and it helps with language development. You know, however, the masking, I'm not aware of any good scientific information that has shown that the masking has really impacted that to an important degree. Some children may have fallen slightly behind with their language development due to masking in daycare and other areas, but then remember, when they're at home, their parents aren't masking when they're around them. So they have plenty of opportunities for normal language development and to catch up.
When should we consider getting this new booster? And should it kind of just be now like an annual shot, like the flu shot moving forward?
You know, it's hard to say with COVID compared to influenza. Influenza has certainly settled into a seasonal disease at this point. So we very rarely see transmission in the summer. And that's, you know, with really extraordinary circumstances. For example, when we first had H1N1 that developed in 2009. COVID has not yet settled into that seasonal pattern that we expected to. We still get development of new variants that sometimes occur during the summer. And the vaccination, you know, is not expected to last 1 year, that protection. So in terms of expecting just one yearly COVID vaccine at this point, I'm not 100% sure if we're there yet, but I do expect eventually we will see COVID settle into a seasonal disease, and hopefully we'll just get one shot every year.
I want to move briefly to monkeypox or mpox, because cases in the United States have been declining over the last few weeks. But during that same time period, the first confirmed death attributed to the virus in California was confirmed in Los Angeles County. Does this virus still pose a significant public health risk?
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, people can die from this, and there are other consequences too, such as brain inflammation or scarring or other problems that may occur. So it's still something to be concerned about. However, since late August, the cases have been decreasing, and we really haven't had a lot of vaccination out there compared to the number of cases that there are. So I don't think that this is in response to vaccination. It may be in response to the public health messaging that has decreased contacts among people who do have rashes and are potentially infectious. And then the original models that suggested that this outbreak would last between 3 to 5 months. And since it started in May, you know, that timing is just about right on. So we are seeing that decrease, and I'm really grateful for that.
Where are we in the scale up and availability of vaccines for mpox?
You know, at the beginning of the concern with mpox, we really had a very limited number of doses available in the U.S. that were really restricted in terms of their use.
They even thought about splitting the doses, right, to spread it out more?
And they did, yeah. So the two advances are that the manufacturer scaled up manufacture of the vaccine, and then they've been giving it intradermally, which gets a higher immune response. And so changing the way that the vaccine has been administered has been a way to stretch the vaccine doses without compromising with protection. And so now the vaccine is much more widely available. It was really restricted to certain high-risk groups early on, but now there's clinics at UC Davis, other healthcare providers, as well as public health. So anybody who thinks they should get a monkeypox or mpox vaccine, really talk to your healthcare provider and get a referral to one of the clinics.
All right. Well, let's focus our attention now on influenza, the flu. What's the current outlook for this season?
You know, a lot of times what we do is we look to the southern hemisphere to see what we're going to expect. And in Australia, it was a really terrible influenza season. Their season, of course, occurs during their winter, which is our summer. And they saw about a 60% increase in the number of cases that they expected. If you look at the average that they've had over the past 5 years. So I think this might be due to all the restrictions we've had due to COVID. People have not been exposed. A lot of people didn't get vaccinated. And because of that, immunity has really waned. And with people now out and about and interacting, you know, this has the potential to be a historically really bad influenza season in the U.S.
Yeah. What is your recommendation on when you should get a flu shot as well as a COVID booster? Can you get them at the same time, and should you?
Yeah, I do recommend getting them at the same time. You do get slightly more side effects if you get them at the same time. But you know, personally, I'd rather just get that over with rather than have them separate and have those side effects at two separate times. So I do recommend getting them at the same time. And the optimal time to get your flu vaccine is either late September or early October so that it does last through the expected peak months of influenza activity.
The CDC also recommends children 6 months to 8 years of age may need two flu shots. Under what circumstances would you recommend this?
Yeah, so the children at those ages, if they haven't been given flu vaccine in prior seasons, they need two flu shots to get a better immune response because they likely haven't been exposed to influenza disease. They haven't built up immunity that way or by vaccination. So those children should start their vaccination now, so that they can get their second dose by the time it's later in September, early in October. And then in addition, people who are pregnant, and especially those who are in the third trimester, should get vaccinated right away because pregnant women have a much higher risk of severe disease due to influenza, and influenza may induce preterm delivery too.
Is there a time during your pregnancy where it's more optimal to get vaccinated for flu or get a COVID booster, whether it's your first, second, or third trimester?
You know, whenever it's indicated is when it should be recommended. So certainly women in their third trimester should get vaccinated now, and everybody else should get vaccinated late September, early October.
And they can both get it concurrently as well. That would be your recommendation, flu and a COVID booster?
Yeah, you know, just that's me personally. I would rather just get it over with and just get them both done at the same time. But if people want to choose to do them separately, they can do that. But that's going to be side effects, you know, at two separate periods, plus the inconvenience of having to go to your healthcare provider to get those shots.
Yeah. Finally, we focused a lot on COVID, Mpox, as well as the flu. But are there any other viruses or diseases that are on your radar that we should keep in mind as we head into the fall season?
Well, there's always something, right?
So
there's
of course.
the CDC recently had an advisory about acute flaccid myelitis due to enterovirus D68 that causes a polio-like syndrome. So that's something that as pediatricians were on the lookout since this does primarily affect children. And then for COVID, you know, there's still other variants out there that are concerning. We're seeing an increase of variant BA4.6, there's 2.75.2. So there's other variants out there that we're keeping an eye on, and you just never know if they're going to develop into a real concern or if they're just going to fade away.
Yeah, still a busy time for you, Dr. Blumberg.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Dean Blumberg is Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis. Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Up next, the rights of women in Afghanistan began to erode after the Taliban took over. And those who came to the United States have faced a new set of challenges. We'll head to the Central Valley and learn about a program helping Afghan women find a place of support. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. As quickly as the Taliban took over Afghanistan, educational rights for women began to diminish. Many were denied education after sixth grade and forced to wait at home for instructions if they would be able to attend school. Those who came to the United States faced a new set of challenges, including a new culture and a different language. Modesto Junior College professor Ruth Luman saw a need for a program aimed at helping those who were settling into the region. Ham Bastagi Zanan is a new student organization helping Afghan women find a place to support each other and navigate new challenges. Helping to lead the charge are two students with incredible stories of perseverance, Layla Nourani and Shabnam Muhadidi. Well, Layla and Shabnam, I'd love to start from the beginning. Can you tell us about your educational journey in Afghanistan to now the United States? Layla, I'll start with you.
Thanks. Hello to you and to all listeners who listen to this program. My name is Layla. I have a bachelor's degree in social science, special history parts, and at Kabul University, one of the big universities in Afghanistan. And also, I studied journalism for 1 year in one private university in Afghanistan.
You were a journalist in Afghanistan, correct?
Yes.
You know, how long have you been in the United States?
It's just 1 year I'm here, but in California, it's more than 6 months, and in Modesto, it's just 2 months.
Wow. What concerns did you have last year when it comes to your safety that led to this journey to the United States and California and the Central Valley?
Yeah, that was very, very, very and difficult time for me because I escaped from my country last year, and when Taliban took over my country, and already they have a power there. And in 20 years, we had a very bad times with Taliban because they killed lots of people in Afghanistan. They killed journalists. And besides that, because my family, my father, my mom, my brother and my sister, they were all journalists in Afghanistan. So that was very difficult time for us.
How is your family doing?
They're all good. They're all with me here. But in Afghanistan, we had a lots of reports, lots of program about people, about the government. And we are now here and we're very happy.
I believe the Committee for the Protection of Journalists, they helped you escaped to the United States. You actually, you know, and landed in Turlock initially. How was this really a major change to your life?
Yeah. So Committee Protect Journalists, CPG, helped us to escape from Afghanistan. And we were 9 days in Qatar and then 3 days in Bahrain and Washington and also 4 months in Indiana. They're all military camps. And that was very difficult time for my people also, for my family and myself. So we are very happy to hear and safe, but it was very difficult time because 6 months we were in a hotel in Turlock, and so that was very difficult for me.
How did you land at Modesto Junior College?
So Modesto Junior College for me, it's very important place to find myself again because I need to learn English more and I need to connect with the all community. I need to connect with the culture here. So Modesto Junior College helped me to know about everything in United States and also especially in Modesto.
Shabnam, I want to get to you now. What was your journey like in Afghanistan to now in the Central Valley?
Thank you. Well, I actually finished my high school back in Afghanistan, but right before I start going to college, I immigrated to the United States. So my journey to college was that, the very first thing that as soon as I kind of settled down here in Modesto was resuming my education. So I started doing some sort of a little bit of internet search about the education system here in the United States, and then asking other Afghans in the community about the nearest college in the community. And that's how I got to know about the MJC, and I joined, and that's, yep, how it started.
What were the biggest changes or maybe even challenges you faced while embarking at Modesto Junior College and navigating campus life?
Well, I was actually very excited about starting college. I knew that it would be a different experience, and I really love to start that college life. But it actually was a different experience, but exactly not how I pictured it to be, because I started college in spring 2021 in the middle of the pandemic, and all classes were online, completely online. So that definitely was the biggest challenge that I faced.
Now that classes are no longer completely virtual, I would just imagine it's been such a big shift in physically being with classmates.
Definitely. But now that I'm pretty much used to online classes, it feels a bit odd to be physically in class.
Yeah, it's still very odd. It is still a very odd time. That is for sure. I want to get to this new organization. It's called Hambastagi Zanan. Shabnam, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes. Yeah.
And what does it mean?
Well, Hambastagi is actually a Farsi or Dari word, which means solidarity. And or a mutual support between a group. So Hambastagi Zanan, when we say it, means that women who have gathered together for the same cause to offer their mutual support and eventually empower each other. And this is actually exactly what the goal of these gatherings are, to use any possible resource in our disposition to help these women, to help each other overcome the challenges that are faced and be successful, both academically and while adjusting into this new life.
Well, Professor Lumen, this starts with you. You saw a need for a program like this aimed at helping those settling into the region. We just heard the stories of Layla and Shabnam. I would imagine those aren't unique in terms of you identifying a need that needed to be filled at Modesto Junior College.
Right. And, you know, this type of student network or student association is not necessarily really new. The college has other student networks that provide special student populations more customized support. For example, one network is Comunidad, a network supporting Latinx students at the college. There's also a reentry network for formerly incarcerated students coming to the college, and many, many others actually. But there had not yet been a network created for the special needs of Afghan women students. And in my own experience, living in northern Ethiopia for a time, I saw the power of women's associations. And these women's associations organized regular gatherings of women to provide not only a sense of community, but also to solve problems. In fact, women's associations were sometimes a place of innovation, figuring out ways to get housework done more efficiently so that they could engage more in the community. So as I met other Afghan women students here at MJC, I wondered if there was maybe a similar sort of model in Afghanistan. And I think the hope is that combining the student support network with other innovation education initiatives already on campus, women can hopefully, you know, come together, be empowered, and overcome some barriers in new ways.
What kind of services does this organization provide, and how long has it been around? I know it's not unique, but in terms of serving Afghan students and women, how long has it been around in Modesto Junior College?
Well, we are just starting. We put the Hambastagi Zanan together really sort of the beginning in spring, during the spring semester. We felt we needed to be able to kind of come out of COVID a bit, so that we could actually have these face-to-face meetings. So we just started. We had a meeting yesterday, a gathering yesterday. 60 women showed up.
Wow.
It was very interactive.
Well, Layla, how have the meetings been? I know it's just beginning, it's in its infancy, but you know, 60 women, that's a lot.
Yes, for me, yes. It was amazing yesterday, because all women have they are like this program and they wanted to share their problems. So that was very amazing for us, for our team, for Ambassegi team.
Shabnam, how was it for you? I mean, you must have not only could relate, but also, you know, just talking to, you know, more 60 women about, you know, the needs that they have from a similar experience like your own.
Yeah, no, it was really amazing to see 60 women showing up. And they were all, what I could see was that they were all very excited and in fact, very happy that this community does exist and they can, which they can rely on and come to because of the challenges that they are faced. And we kind of did a survey of their challenges as well. And we could see that those were the things that we had in mind, we already had listed and pretty much common among all the this women.
I would imagine when immigrating from another country with language barriers, a different culture, a different way of life, that you can feel very alone. But mm-hmm. hearing that there were 60 people that now can look at someone with a similar lived experience, a similar journey, although not identical, must just be so comforting and maybe even empowering as well.
Yeah.
Ruth, did you see that as well? I guess, how did you feel when you were seeing, you know, dozens of Afghan women really attending this organization because, you know, there was a need for it?
You know, we weren't sure how many would show up. I think we were sort of hoping for maybe 15 to 20 and to see four times that many, essentially, it was exciting and also a little bit overwhelming too. I think, you know, we had spent a lot of time preparing, a lot of effort in kind of bringing a leadership team together and getting to know one another as leaders, and then planning a gathering and then having 60 women show up with really these big problems, these issues of childcare and transportation. And I think the real challenges now are to figure out how can we work to solve some of these very persistent and seemingly overwhelming barriers to independence and education, things like getting a driver's license, access to childcare. And so I'd love to put this out to the listeners. If you've got resources, ideas, connections, you know, definitely connect with us.
Yeah. I mean, Modesto Junior College is going above and beyond education in a traditional sense.
Well, I think if we really want to educate the community, I think we have to. I don't think it's a choice. I don't think as a teacher, I can just say, hey, there's an exam on Monday and ignore the fact that there are women who are going to have struggles in completing their education because of all these other issues.
This program, Hambastagazanan, is it only open to college students at Modesto Junior College, or can other women in the Afghan community join?
Actually, other women from the community are most definitely welcome to join us. We know that there are a lot of women who may not feel that they belong on a college campus or in an educational environment. We want to change that. So Afghan women from the community are more than welcome to come check things out, meet others, and hopefully be inspired by others they see and become college students themselves.
What stands out to you about Layla and Shabnam?
Well, I'll try to respond to this without becoming too emotional, but when I look at Shabnam and Layla and the other women in this leadership team, Farhat, Farishta, Ghazal, and Shamim, I can't help but feel that they, and you know, many others like them, they are really, they're superheroes. You know, forget Wonder Woman. What these women have done in learning a new language, a new culture, getting an education, and wanting, on top of all that, wanting to give of their own time and effort and support others, to me, it's nothing short of amazing. And I am absolutely confident that they will go on and they're going to do amazing things here. I would bet $1 million on their success. and they challenge me, they inspire me. And I think, you know, they and other refugee immigrant students like them are really, they're the best students at the college. And I feel really incredibly fortunate to be working alongside them. It is like our community has been given a gift in their resettlement here. They are assets. And as a community college, we must not waste that gift and instead really invest in it. And they have tremendous contributions to make that will benefit all of us, that will benefit the entire community. And we need to figure out ways to empower that.
Shabnam, what does it feel like to take all of that in, what Ruth just said?
Well, Professor Lohman has been very kind and for everything that she said, but I do agree that what I see in these women and other refugee students, that they are really, they really are trying very hard to learn something. They really are doing their best, because most of them are just given the opportunity to get an education, and they are doing their best to just get that opportunity and use it.
What has your family said about attending Modesto Junior College?
Well, my family actually has been very supportive of my decision on going to college, because they actually believe in the power of education, especially my mom. She doesn't live here, but she constantly asks me about my classes and how my life in college is going on. And she encourages me actually on a daily basis.
You know, we are more than a year into Taliban rule in Afghanistan since the U.S. withdrawal. What can you tell us about what life is like there?
Well, actually, from what we hear from relatives and see on social media, life actually has been pretty tough on people, especially women. Girls from secondary and high school are not able to go to school. The schools are closed. And other women, like the presence of women in the society and being active in the society, is actually not seen, apart from other problems that people face. It's pretty challenging. It's pretty hard.
Yeah, it sounds dire. Layla, are you talking? Do you have any knowledge of what's going on in Afghanistan a year into Taliban rule?
So I always read the news about Afghanistan, and also I'm part of association, women association here to help women journalists in Afghanistan also. But the situation that Shabnam told, there's was very bad in Afghanistan, and I think the life is for every person that live in Afghanistan, there's what was very bad.
You are now a Hambastagi leader at Modesto Junior College. What is your message for those listening to you right now, Layla?
So I wanted to tell you, the people, the community that live here, please help us approve our program, our Hambastagi program here.
Shabnam, you're a Hambastagi leader as well. What is your message?
Well, for those listening, I would like to say that we definitely need the community's support in any way that they can help. And I know for sure that how supportive this community have been. And there are people who are very welcoming and are volunteering to help the immigrants. For example, one of the greatest men I know is Mr. Gell. He is one of the volunteers with the immigration office, and he helps a lot with the women specifically to overcome these challenges and can help. So I know that there are actually other Mr. Gels out there who can help, and we do need their help and support.
Yeah,
to achieve this mission.
There certainly are. Professor Lohman, ending with you, this is an organization, a program in its infancy. How would you like it to grow?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, you know, time is still yet to tell how things will evolve. But yeah, I think I would like to echo what Layla and Shabnam are saying. We'd like to invite the community in to see how we can overcome some of these issues of, you know, childcare and helping women get driver's licenses. These are two big issues or two big challenges that came up that have continued to come up as barriers to education. You know, we need an army of Mr. Gills out there. It's been said that Mr. Gill has taught more Afghan women to drive in Modesto than there are Afghan women drivers in Afghanistan. But there's only, right now there's just one of him. We need like an army of him to help give women that behind the wheel driver's practice. We need state DMV to provide driver's permit tests in Dari. The Farsi vocabulary is not translatable across languages. We have all kinds of problems we'd like to solve, and we'd love to get support from the larger community to figure out some of these, what seem to be intractable issues. I'd love to get a childcare app to connect Afghan women to each other. So Helen Mayer with Otter, if you're out there and you're listening, we need an app for Afghan women to connect other Afghan women together for childcare in Dari, in Pashto. So we've got lots of ideas, but we can't do it all on our own.
Well, I just want to thank you for chipping away at it. It is incredibly important. Professor Lumen, Leila, and Shabnam, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
And that is my conversation with Modesto Junior College Professor Ruth Lumen and students Leila Nurani and Shabnam Muhadidi about a new student organization helping Afghan women find a place to support each other. Still ahead, the Sacramento Hispanic Chamber of Commerce joins us to discuss Hispanic Heritage Month and the impact the Latino community is having across our region. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Unidos, inclusivity for a stronger nation. That's the theme of this year's National Hispanic Heritage Month. The celebration of culture, identity, belonging, and inclusion kicked off last week and runs through October 15th. Now, if you wonder why it starts in the middle of September, there is a good reason. On September 15th, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala all celebrate their independence anniversary. On the 16th, Mexico does, followed by Chile on the 18th. And on October 12th, another important date is Dia de la Raza, or Columbus Day. Originally a week-long celebration first adopted by President Lyndon Johnson, years later, President Ronald Reagan extended Hispanic Heritage to an entire month back in 1988. And here in Sacramento, there was a big kickoff event at the state capitol highlighting contributions of the Hispanic community and all that they've done for California, including the sacrifices during the pandemic. And there are many more across the region. Joining us today is Kathy Rodriguez Aguirre, who leads the Sacramento Hispanic Chamber of Commerce Foundation Board. Good morning. Thanks for making the trip.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, so throughout California, but really with a Sacramento lens, what makes Hispanic Heritage special for you and your colleagues?
Well, so much, actually, to be honest. I always tell people.
It's a loaded question.
It's a loaded question. I always tell people that when you're, you know, Latina, Latino, it's like every day we're celebrating, you know, being who we are. But during this month in particular, it gives us an extra opportunity just to elevate it just that much more and really talk about the contributions and accomplishments that are happening with our Latino and Latina-owned businesses, as well, you know, with the community throughout.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm from Los Angeles. So I just loved growing up and having, you know, I mean, I'm Mexican, but having friends who are Puerto Rican, mm-hmm. Nicaraguan, Guatemalan, you know, the list goes on and on. Many of us are mixed race. Yes. So like, you know, como un mezcla, so which is even more beautiful. So but this is really, as you indicate, a time to pause and really reflect on contributions. How would you like us to pause during Hispanic Heritage Month?
I would like really for people to realize, just you said, how diverse our culture is, you know, based on just the different countries that we represent, the different industries that we're in, the different contributions that we're making on a daily basis. There's so much. And what I really like for our younger generation to know is to realize, you know, Latinos have always been here and that now we're hitting first, second and third generations. So we are here. And so the accomplishments that we make are part of the fabric of our community. And so it's that sense of belonging that sometimes doesn't always feel that way because it feels like maybe you're always just starting out or just coming, or maybe that's the perception that people have of our community. But the reality is there's a strong foundation here. When we look at our businesses, we have many that are multi-generational. And, you know, when we look at the accomplishments that we see in our artist community, our community at large, when you're looking at bringing the heritage and really talking about that, it's because we want to make sure that our younger folks understand that this is where you came from, but your path can be anything mm-hmm. because you're here.
Given that you're with the Sacramento Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, with a business lens, talk to us about the impact this community has had on the Sacramento region, both culturally and economically.
When you look at our small businesses, especially in our diverse corridors, what's really important for people to realize is how many of them are anchors in those neighborhoods. When you look at the past recession and this pandemic that we're still trying to muddle through, what you'll see is a lot of those businesses stayed open. They had to pivot. They needed, you know, to do things maybe a little differently, but they were still serving those neighborhoods. So when I look at that, I think, wow, if we intentionally invest here, what could that look like? And we're starting to see that others are having that same question and answering that. Mm. So, for instance, when you look at Northgate, you look at Northgate, it's this thriving, you know, Latino community. A lot of people don't realize there's 62% within that area that are Latino. And you look at these businesses there and they have continued, you know, to grow. So Algo Bueno is a good example. So they opened there. They had a successful catering business for 7 years. They now have a brick and mortar. The reason I bring this up is that with Councilmember Harris, there was city council allocated $5 million to that area of investment. So now there's some real investment and time in there where people can really decide, what do we want this to look like? How do we build up our businesses? And it's not just for the neighborhoods, but because they want to invite others mm-hmm. to come here, come and see what we have because we want to celebrate it with you.
Given that this month's theme is, or this year's theme is Unidos, mm-hmm. which is inclusivity for a stronger nation. I mean, this follows a couple years where, you know, we're business owners, including the Latino businesses, as you indicated, you know, when a lot of us were at home, they really stepped up, they made sacrifices, especially at the onset of the pandemic. Does that take on a different meaning for you or a deeper meaning for you, this theme, inclusivity for a stronger nation?
Yeah, it's interesting because for us during pandemic, our thing was Junto Sacramento, so together Sacramento. So we're right in line with Unidos and really coming together to make sure that we are working together, that we're helping each other out, and really that it helped the entire region. So we've all seen essential workers, a lot of them came from the Latino community. Our small businesses, a lot of them, you know, had to stay open. And so they had to find ways to make sure they were serving the neighborhoods and the communities where they're at. When you look at this recovery, you're seeing it coming from this community. Who said, you know what, we actually did okay through this, so we know we can do more. So we've seen a lot of growth through a lot of the businesses that went through our programs. So many of them right now are, like everyone, trying to hire more employees. But we're looking at people who are going from food truck to adding brick and mortar, for people who are looking for second and third locations, for people that had an idea who are just starting a business. So when we look at it, we feel like there's a sense of resiliency that, you know, together, unidos, united, we really, you know, came to a place where we realized as long as we support support one another and provide the resources that anything is possible.
What are the challenges that remain for Latino Hispanic entrepreneurs across Sacramento?
It's really that access and opportunity. So when we look at the Chamber of Commerce, those are two words that I use often, because the reality is, in order for anyone to be successful, they need to have access to opportunity. And so what people... We've heard that phrase, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
So we take very seriously that our job is to make sure that we're constantly providing that education, telling people about these opportunities and helping them get there. So we have a lot of partners that we work with, and they've been fantastic. So when we talk about Unidos, we're also talking outside of the Latino community. So, for example, we have another business, Gondo Fusion, that went through two of our programs, Emprende and Level Up, which is a program we do with Sacramento State. And they just actually signed a lease over here at Inline to use one of the ghost kitchens. Well, in doing that, it's because they went through the program at Sacramento State, found out a different innovative way to be able to expand their business, and have signed up for that. We have another one out in Northgate again, Cheetos Restaurant, who went through our program, was able to apply to be in the Midtown Market, received a $10,000 grant to be one of the businesses there. Those are partners who are saying, let's help you grow your community too. So it takes all of us. When you talk about Unidos, we're talking about everyone really united in order to help our business community.
Yeah, embracing what a community is and the diversity within it. Businesses, especially we're talking about small businesses here, have been so hard hit, you know, in the last 2 to 3 years of the pandemic. What are the challenges that still remain?
Again, you know, it's access to opportunity. It's also within us realizing that there's a value to what we have. So when I talk to our own Latino businesses, it's realizing know your worth, know your value. Mm-hmm. So during Hispanic Heritage Month, when we talk about elevating it, you'll see a lot, you know, including ourselves, like, you know, saying, support our small businesses. Here's where you can go, really talk about them and make sure that you're utilizing their services and spending your money there, right? We all talk about that for our small businesses. But for them, it's also, you know, understanding that you have a value and what you're providing is important. So just there's this idea sometimes that something's ethnic, you know, whether it's Latino or any other diverse community, that it should be worth less. And I'm here to say that it's not. Like, there is a strong value in that. So we want to make sure that our Latino businesses own that. And, you know, that's what's going to help them grow, too. So some of the obstacles are a little bit internal. Some of them are external, but we're certainly here to help them, you know, with whatever that might be.
Yeah. I mean, when talking about the Chamber of Commerce, I mean, we're talking about the business community, but it doesn't just exist in a vacuum because it's part of the community. And there are some big issues that have been taking place just in recent weeks in California, as well as nationally. We had UFW going on a 335-mile pilgrimage to the state capitol. You have Hurricane Fiona devastating Puerto Rico on almost the 5-year anniversary of Hurricane Maria. Puerto Rico is without power, and it is just frustrating when you see the images, because the same parallels are happening in terms of lack of services and lack of support when compared to Hurricane Maria. Then you also have Republican leaders, notably Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, sending migrants to Martha's Vineyard. There were some reportedly that arrived here in Sacramento. How are you talking about this within the chamber?
With honesty, you know, I'm going to start there, because these are frustrating situations, you know, for all of us when we see it. And, you know, we're here to say that one, I'm going to start with the one, and to share, you know, we're seeing our migrants. There were some that came here from Venezuela that got bused here to Sacramento. And we're fortunate that there is some key organizations that have stepped up that are working hard to make sure they're taken care of. And, you know, we're here to, you know, amplify that voice, but also, you know, to share too that, you know, this isn't right. We are talking about human beings. So if you think about yourself, if you went somewhere and someone told you, hey, here's a really great opportunity, get on this bus here, and then you got there and realized that's not what it is at all, is it fair to be tricking people in this way? At what point are we not supposed to be just humane about how we're treating people? So there is that. We look at the UFW march and we think there's so much progress that has been made, and yet there's so much more that needs to happen. And so, you know, so why we're still here, you know, championing for the same rights. So many people feel you must already have that. And I want to clarify something, too, because sometimes with the UFW, I read this a lot where people thought, oh, they're championing because they want voting rights. And people confused it with like the right to vote, when really, no, they're just trying to champion for the right to come together and unionize, which is completely different. And they're trying to take care of, you know, their own rights as workers. And we should be supportive of that. Again, these are people that during pandemic continued to work and in very harsh circumstances and sometimes didn't have access again to the same opportunities we did for things like PPE that we needed. It came late. And so shouldn't we all think, hey, this is where our food comes from. We all want to take care of that. I think we also need to realize when in the Latino community, anything that happens there, it's happening to all of us. And there's this myth out there that something's happening, it's only happening there. So we, for whatever reason now in our world, it shouldn't matter as much. But that's not the case. When you look at the Latino community, it is still the fastest growing demographic. In the report that we did, a Hispanic Economic Report that we released as a chamber in 2021, under 18 in the Sacramento region, 96% are U.S. citizens. Mm. So when you look at that, realize the tides are turning. And so this is where your investment needs to be for your future workforce, for your future entrepreneurs, your small business owners, your policymakers. They're all coming here. So I think it's time that we learn that if we don't work all together, then we're not all going to prosper together. And so during Hispanic Heritage Month, which is so diverse in everything as you shared, all the countries that are celebrated, but I get the opportunity to talk about things that actually unite us, which mm-hmm. is business and the economy. And we can all come together in looking at that and thinking that if we all want to prosper, how are we going to do that? Then we need to look here.
Well, on that note, Kathy Rodriguez Aguirre leads the Sacramento Hispanic Chamber of Commerce Foundation Board. Thank you for the time.
Thanks.
That is it for Insight today. We'll catch you back here tomorrow. Have a great day.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.